Hello, 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 and welcome to Crit Club, the podcast where four friends watch movies from the Criterion Channel streaming service that none of them have seen, and then we discuss them. I am your host this week. My name is Corey, and with me, as always, are Wizard.
Hey, yellow, I'm Wizard. Hello.
Angela.
Can I clean this room? It smells really weird.
And Peter, we like the smell.
Oh, brother.
Here we go.
Tagging out immediately. Hello, Corey. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, boy, we got a doozy this week. So I'm just going to give a little bit of trigger warning.
We're definitely a little bit.
The trigger warning was for last week before everybody watched
it. Yeah, that's true. We're definitely gonna be talking about sex. We will probably be talking about sexual assault of minors. This week.
People generally.
Life in general. This week we were watching the 1976 French film. Yes, French film. We'll get into that later. In the Realm of the Senses. It was directed by Nagisa Oshima. It's a fictionalized retelling of a real story of Sada Abe, a Japanese geisha and sex worker who in 1936 strangled her lover, Kichizo, and then cut off his genitals and carried them around with her for 4 days. When this happened in 1936, it was a national sensation and it basically built itself up to be like sort of mythical in Japanese culture. There's been many different adaptations, movies, comics, all that stuff about this story over the years. And Oshima, who is not a stranger to this podcast, we watched another of his movies, Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence.
A very similar movie.
A very similar movie. Oshima wanted to create a movie that portrayed Abe in a more sympathetic light. And one that was focused more on the sort of intense sexual attraction that he imagined her having to her lover. And, well, sexual it was. This movie became known for its unsimulated sex acts, including various portrayals of various kinky activities. When it came out, it was heavily censored, banned in Japan, where it's still banned today, where most of the filming or where the filming was taking place. The negatives were filmed in Japan, but then they were sent over to France to be developed and edited in France. And then they had to basically move it through customs in order to get it back into Japan for a release there where it was banned. Or it was shown with big black banners at the bottom. So you could only see kind of like heads bobbing around. You couldn't really see what was going on. And it was also banned in the U.S., Brazil, large portions of Canada, probably other places too.
Wow, banned in Brazil, but they loved Pasoch. Okay.
That's true. Pasoch. For a while, you were unable to get a copy of this until like the early 1990s when it finally got a release. In 2009, Criterion released it. I think it was 2009, and it is number 446 in the Criterion Collection. Oh, the Criterion Collection. You are full of some true gems here.
It is in the collection itself? I didn't look that up.
Yeah, it is in the collection. Now, I just want to say something, get it out of the way before I turn it over to my co-host, that, you know, I do like movies that are controversial. I like movies that have larger stories that kind of surround them, you know, whether it's like getting banned, like, you know, Daisies or ruins the career for going crazily over budget, like Playtime. But ever since I picked Pasoch, which is another controversial movie, I have been careful about what I picked and that I do look up to see if there were any kids that were exploited in the movie. For example, I was interested in this movie Night Games because we had talked about it before and like John Waters had said it was one of his favorite movies. So I just like looked it up and I saw, oh, there's a minor in it who gets naked. And so I was like, no, okay, I'm not gonna pick that movie. I read up on this movie ahead of time. I read it up on Criterion, on Wikipedia. In none of my reading did I see that there were kids in this movie, that there were naked kids in this movie, and then there were naked kids who were apparently getting assaulted by the actors in this movie. And so I'm sorry to the kids for having this happen, but I'm also sorry for subjecting others to that, to this strange scene that doesn't do anything for the plot or the characters or anything. I don't even know why it's in there.
I'm not a fan of it, but I tried to get to the place where why that was in there. There's viable reason it's in there, but I still don't condone it's in there. Sure. We have to talk about it because it's there. But anyway, sorry for interrupting.
We will talk about it. I think there's also plenty more to talk about this movie. And for that, I'm going to look to my co-hosts for their initial impressions. So, in the realm of the senses, did you think this movie was awesome and cool, like unsimulated sex in a feature film? Or do you think this movie was disgusting and depraved, like unsimulated sex in a feature film? Wizard, what are your impressions of In the Realm of the Senses?
Oh my goodness, I'm going first. I was wondering if I would go first. If my mom were still here, she would not be happy that I saw this movie. And I feel like everyone's mothers feel exactly the same way. It's an interesting movie. It is a movie that starts off like deeply unerotic, and then it gets kind of erotic, and then it gets deeply unerotic again.
That's a good summary,
It's an emotional roller coaster, at least that way. Visually, it's very interesting. There are some really cool shots that I enjoyed. There's some interesting use of color. I guess the big elephant in the room is the unsimulated sex between the actors. And I got to tell you, at first I was like, oh, wow. Okay. And I think that's an interesting choice. And I think it helps communicate some of the emotions that are obviously like integral to this film. And so, you know, I think it serves an artistic purpose. And so I say, cool, good on ya. I will say, though, that my feeling about this movie ultimately is kind of meh. Like, once you get over, like, the shock of unsimulated sex, and once you get over kind of the shock of the sort of more titillating aspects of the story, for me, this is a movie that is, you know, it's kind of dull. Like, their sex is dull, and I think it's supposed to be. Like, I know it's supposed to be thrilling, and I know it's supposed to be exciting for them, but, like, while I'm watching this movie, I'm watching two people get more and more boring and more isolated and more, like, hollowed out by each other, which I think was interesting. But, like, again, the sexuality... It peaks very early, and then it's a different kind of movie about like sex as an addiction and how we like end up feeding off of each other. And that's interesting and cool, but like I mean honestly, guys, I skipped, like, I found myself like fast forwarding, like when they started fucking. I found myself like after like the fourth scene, I was just kind of like, okay, let's move it along. I think my favorite scene in the film, and hopefully we all kind of hit that, I think what this movie is about or whatever, my favorite scene in the film is where Kichizo goes out for a haircut. And he leaves the house. He hasn't left the house in forever. He gets a haircut, and as he's walking back home, he's walking against this like marching column of Japanese soldiers, and like that's the movie. The movie is about how we respond to the awful world around us, right? The movie is about Japan heading into this like horrific meat grinder of a period in its history. It's already oppressive and imperialistic and militaristic like during this period, and so it makes sense that some people would opt out of that life and lock themselves up in a tea room until it smells funny. That being said, this movie is way too loosey-goosey with themes of sexual assault and violence against women and violence against men too, really. Like, it's way loose with these themes. I have a lot to say about it, but my feelings are like, meh, it was fine. It was a fine movie, I guess, maybe.
Yeah. Right on. How about you, Angela?
Oh, it's such a challenge, isn't it? To like say whether you liked this movie, because it is so problematic. And I think I liked it a lot more than Wizard did, mainly because I feel like I haven't seen intimacy incorporated into sexual acts like to the extent that it was in this film. And that is the juicy stuff that I look for, actually, just in my own sexual relationships. I want to see that kind of intimacy, right? So to see it on film, even if I completely agree with Wizard, it gets boring as fuck. This person, the woman, Sada, is obsessed, and there's not a lot of extra there. But there is a lot of extra understanding, like, you know, what is going on, the other, what the other people think, the superintendent that she also goes to visit, and ultimately just watching the complete destruction of these two people by their sexual obsession, and what that actually looks like. If I was looking at this as a porno and like looking for actual titillation, I think I would have gotten bored. But, you know, you get these little hints that this is going to go down a bad route. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I guess that's the ride I'm on today. And I'm going to make the most of this ride. I thought the cinematography was incredible. I honestly thought the guy in this was super duper hot. And that did a lot for me in terms of like that haircut. Whew, those eyes, those cheekbones.
Even the mustache works, which is
all of it. And interestingly, that guy, that actor became, you know, still a successful actor and is still alive today, continuing to perform.
Yeah, he was a professional actor before, and then he just continued on. And
this didn't bar him from a Japanese celebrité.
No.
Right. I didn't know what to expect. I read almost nothing. I just knew it was going to be, you know, something objectionable in some way, and was actually surprised that I wasn't as offended as I could be. And, you know, I have to say it helped to watch it with a person and sort of talk through some of what we were watching. And it was, I felt like I just hadn't seen that kind of story told in cinema before. And so in that way, it felt really fresh to me. And it also was representative of like, this is the 1970s. This was made, what, 75, 76?
Sex.
Mm-hmm. Pre-Star Wars. And,
right, pre-Star Wars. Are we watching Sex Wars? So I feel like this was a time cinematically when people were starting to play with sexual themes in cinema a little more openly or graphically, explicitly. And I think that in that way, it is representative of the, of an era. But like Wizard said, Corey said, you know, there's, you know, there's some serious bad shit in here. There's some, there's rape. I would say, you know, that whole section with the housekeeper, that was rape. And I really, you know, that wasn't fun. And I really thought it was inappropriate for children to be part of this. You know, they can't consent. They don't know what's going on. I get what was trying to be told in that story was, in my impression, I don't know if we want to save this for later. I think I'll save it for later. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't hate it. I enjoyed watching it. And what I wish is that pornography showed more intimacy and like how people relate. That would be interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. Very good. How about you, Peter? You have a ponderous look.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to find more to say about this movie. I'm really aligned with Wizard here. Maybe even liked it a little less than him. Like, I think this is a pretty... I didn't know anything about it. Didn't read up anything. And I didn't fast forward, but boy, did I want to. Because boy, it just gets
just
like,
let go,
all right,
man.
Yeah,
just do it.
All right, yeah. They sure love fucking. Okay, we get this. All right. And like any sort of like. Audacity or of the, you know, unsimulated sex or whatever really wore out pretty quickly, and so it was just like made the whole thing feel kind of dull, and then, you know, the last 15 to 20 minutes I actually found it pretty sad. Like, I think I was left with this, like, Wizard, you said it really well, of like a hollowing out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This I felt like there was a lot in this movie that I would compare with like Requiem for a Dream or like Sid and Nancy. And there's like one other movie that I was trying to think of like of just two sort of like, you know, self-destructive entities just smashing into each other until like nothing is left sort of thing. And so I feel like this movie kind of did that. And I think, you know, there's this whole, you know, middle part where it's just kind of boring and again and again and again, and it like it's leading up to that point of having them be these two you know, hollowing out entities, and I think it earned that, and I think it earned like the kind of real deep sadness that I got from this, but I didn't I guess I didn't enjoy like this, you know, like I think I'm happy to have seen it as a as a, am I though? Like, I mean, because what is it showing me? Like, there were a few shots and there were a few sort of different, you know, postulations of intimacy that I did think were interesting. And there are a few sort of surreal touches that I kind of enjoyed. But I don't know. I'm still kind of reaching for what I'm left with this movie besides sort of emptiness in what it's trying to portray a lot of times, and then emptiness with how it kind of left me feeling. And that's even before getting into a lot of the problematic stuff. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, like pretty short and sweet about this, I guess. I was like, it's one of those stories where I like wanted one more element, like one more, you know, inciting or either inward or outward sort of like something to spur something else from happening. But instead, it just kind of felt like a binary star just like swirling down mm-hmm. the drain of sexuality. Yeah, Corey, what did you think of In the Realm of the Senses?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm kind of similar. Like, I didn't love this movie. I think in a lot of ways, it is a very small movie. It's a very like,
which I love,
small. And that's why I thought like as I was watching this, I was like, I don't really like this, but I'm like, I wonder if like Angela and Peter are gonna like this, because this seems like the kind of, like if you take out a lot of the sort of dressing of the movie, like it's the kind of stories that I think that you two, you know, tend to like and stuff.
I see that.
I mean, I think there was nuance. I know it was super boring because they just kept fucking, but there was an escalation in every scene of a new thing that they did. And I was interested in seeing how each of them responded to that each escalation. Mm-hmm. And that's what carried mm-hmm. me along. Anyway, keep going, Corey. Sorry.
Yeah. And I think, Peter, I wrote down something you said. It was like, it felt earned, but I didn't necessarily enjoy it. Like, I felt the same way. And it's funny because, like, I had read up on this before. And so I had read Sada Abe's Wikipedia page, or at least some of it. It's very, very long. Yeah. But Frida hadn't. And so I watched this with Frida. And so she didn't know, like, where it was heading. And I kind of always knew where the end result was. And so, you know, we were watching it. And Frida was just like, uh-oh. You know, there's, like, a conversation or whatever. And she's like, oh, someone's getting cut in this movie. You know? And then, like,
she brandishes that knife really early
on. Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
And it was, like, later, you know, a little bit later, she's like, oh, someone's dying. Someone's got to die. Like, you know, so... it was funny because they did, you know, sort of set the stage for this. They did put seeds in there. And, you know, I also, I didn't mention, but is it, I've already forgotten his name, Oshima, the mm-hmm. director. He was part of the Japanese New Wave, which I do not know very much about. And I think that this movie is sort of like placed sort of in that, you know, sort of category. It's a label that he's rejected, apparently. But I think that in the spirit of them just like, trying new stuff and like just breaking new ground, and like this is apparently the first hardcore movie that Japan ever produced. So like in the spirit of like doing all that, like I enjoyed that. That's punk rock, man. Like go do it. But yeah, at the end of the day, like it's not like this was particularly titillating or anything like that. It was just, you know, I found it kind of dull at times. But like you know, Wizard said, there was also some really, you know, pretty stuff and some fun shots and just like good composition of things. And so I don't know, it's not a movie that I particularly loved, but I also felt enough that there was enough there to sort of keep me enjoying it. That was kind of my impression.
I want to stress that my criticism of this movie, like dullness, like any criticism of this movie that I have, except for like some of the rapey stuff, any criticism of this movie I have, I myself would rejoin with, that might have been intentional. Like, the dullness might have been intentional. Mm-hmm. The lack of interiority on the part of these characters, completely intentional, you know? Like, it's just because it is the story that it is, and it's done in this way, I get bored like they get bored. And when and like when she's like, hey, we should start strangling each other, when we should start playing with autoerotic asphyxiation and knife play and stuff like that, I'm there. I'm like, sweet, let's ramp it up a little bit. But again, it gets boring, and it gets and that is deliberate, I'm quite sure. Mm-hmm. But it you know, like other storytelling devices, like sometimes that makes for a good movie and sometimes it does not. And
yeah, if you connect, I mean, it doesn't matter if it's deliberative, it's if you connect with it or not, right? Mm. Yeah.
And like the last scene particularly where she's, you know, strangling him with the sash or whatever, like I knew where this was going. I knew that this was going to happen, but I'm like, man, they are just milking this scene. This yeah. is like a good 5-10 minutes longer than it needs to be. And I'm fairly sure that like most of the people that are watching it knew the story because it's such a big popular story in Japan or whatever. So most mm-hmm. of the primary audience would know what it was. So I was like, yeah, this has to be like deliberate. Like you're just,
oh
really
yeah.
For,
that makes actually
stuff.
Sense. I didn't think about that because I didn't know anything about like the backstory of us at all. Mm-hmm. And so you even just saying that, oh, that's exactly why that was as long as it was. Right. It's like for the at home audiences who knew the home story. Yeah, like letting that moment last and last.
Yeah. And, you know, I will say that, like, when I picked this movie and just, like, read up on it and I saw that there was unsimulated sex, like, I thought it was going to be, like, way less than this. You know, I thought it was going to be, like, a...
Why?
Yeah,
why
I thought it was
gonna, that?
I thought it was going to be, like, scenes where it's, like... You could still pass it off as something that would show at a normal theater, but like you learn later, it's like, oh no, they were actually having sex like underneath their kimonos or whatever. It's like, no, that's not what this was at all. It's from the very beginning, it's just like, you know, we're diddling a homeless guy. Like,
oh my gosh,
I forgot about that.
Yeah,
I took a break like 15 minutes into the movie and I went downstairs and I was like, Laura, like. I've seen like a couple of limp dicks, one like fully erect dick. Like this movie is going places. It is going places. I watched this movie with the furtiveness of a 15-year-old watching porn while his parents are home. I was like the egg scene. I was like, if Laura comes up mm-hmm. right now.
Oh my god.
She's gonna
yeah.
be like, what are you doing? And I'll be like, it's for work. And she'll be like, okay. But
it's for work.
I was thinking about watching in my apartment by myself, like the people out in the hallway hearing extended
so
sounds of moaning.
Well, but even the moaning was like really like downplayed and stuff. Like it, mm-hmm. there was no, you know, this didn't sound like, you know, a sort of, you know, porno that you might just like pull up on Pornhub or whatever. This was still very like, do y'all want to hear that? Did anybody watch any of the extra stuff that was on the Criterion?
I assumed it was
not
one.
I didn't yeah. even, like, I covered my eyes through the last parts after the choking. Did not okay. watch any of that. Like, it went on, and I had to be alerted when it was over. So no to the extra.
So the egg scene, the crew mistakenly soft-boiled the first egg, and it broke. And yeah, and the director was absolutely furious. He was screaming and yelling. He sent someone down to the corner to get like cleaning stuff or whatever, and then they hard boiled it and had to redo it. So
hey, good for you guys.
Yeah. I'm traumatized knowing that.
Speaking of not egg related things, like the unsimulated nature of the film as a whole, I think is actually pretty cool. Like the sex is unsimulated, but so is the choking. And I really got nervous for the lead actor as his face gets like redder and redder. And I appreciate that the movie has this way about it where I was kind of fast forwarding through the sort of later part of the movie, those sex scenes. And I was kind of bored, but having said that, like I was still like into this movie. Like I was still like, this is all I was doing. I didn't look at my phone. I didn't like wonder if I could, how can I get out of this and still do a podcast and everyone will think I saw the movie. I was on board from start to finish because of the rawness of it, even though I'm like, let's go. Let's
get to but the rawness chopping. Of it was like, I mean, it was too much. It was, it like numbed itself.
Yeah.
Like
100%.
It, you know, and again, I think that was intentional as part of it, but intentional or not, like if you're showing me that the characters are numb to this, like you have to also understand that maybe the audience will also become numb and also grow bored as they grow bored.
Well, I just I want to throw something out there, people. We have grown up in an age where we have had access, free and unfettered access, to porn. Like, well,
I spent a lot of time thinking about this. But also, I'm not watching this movie for sex.
No, no. I do think that that colors how we react to this film, because, I mean, if you think about it, when it came out, that level of access was not available. So I do wonder if it is less numbing if you haven't had unfettered access to all the porn on your phone and in your laptop that you could possibly have access
more
to.
More numbing, if anything.
But that would also make, but like, I would flip the other way of like, because, and I did towards the big, like the early parts of this movie, I was like, this is kind of just shock. This is kind of just like shock value for shock. I don't think it was. Like, I think parts of it kind of are in some ways. I don't know. And I was just like, either you want to shock me, so you're over hitting me over the head with being shocking, or you're wanting to numb me and you're hitting me over the head with being numb. I don't know.
Go ahead.
No, please, I'm done.
To me, and this might be just like a cultural thing or whatever, to me, this does not play like a porno. Like, it doesn't.
No.
I've seen a number of like 1970s pornos and stuff or whatever, and like this does not have that vibe to it. It just feels like, you know, this is and I think one of the things that this movie does do is it sort of captures the feeling of that NRE, the new relationship energy, where you just like are totally obsessed with a person and like you can't see anything out of the blinders of just sort of narrowly focusing in on this person and just being so just sexually attracted to them and all that stuff. And I think it does capture that, even if like a lot of their the actual sex becomes like sort of mundane. Like, I still felt that for the characters. So and I think that like if that is the story, then it's not really like, this is not paced like a porno or anything like that. It's paced like a love story that, you know, ends up going bad.
It's not pornography. It's graphic, but it's not pornographic. It's about sex, but sex is not like, it's about people who have sex. It's not about it's not about like weird slappy camera angles and that kind of thing. Really artfully shot, I thought. It's great. it's about people who use sex as like their love language, which is a little rote, but or a little trite, but like that they don't talk about anything else. They talk about nothing else. They do nothing else. The first time he sees her, he's like, I like your hips, and then they're off to the races from there.
And that's sort of like, and Peter had said something about this, like if there was like one other thing in this movie, I think it really would have like taken it over the top. So there's the scene where he's walking against the, you know, military guys that are marching. So that was the February 26th incident is what it's called. Oh. It's an actual incident in Japanese history where these...
We talked about this.
Wait, no, don't let him finish.
Lawrence.
Oh, did
we? Yeah, I think so. We did.
Okay. So that happened in 1936, and so that's what this was, you know, doing, and the director was like a very like leftist like director and stuff, and so this was him sort of interjecting like some, you know, sort of amount of politics in it. I think if it were one of the other things that I thought about was Unbearable Lightness of Being, which I haven't read in 25 years. It's been a very long time, but if memory serves me, it's also kind of like a whole bunch of sex, but it's also surrounded by a bunch of like war-torn atrocities that are also happening like sort of in the periphery. And at least when I read that in my, you know, early 20s or, you know, late teens or whenever I read it, it was really, really interesting because, you know, you are reading these like lurid tales and all that stuff, but you know that there's all this other stuff where like basically the world is crumbling around them. And so I think if there was like more of that stuff in there, like showing the juxtaposition of these lives with the sort of politics, it might have just become more complex and interesting to me.
For me, if they did that, it would have given them more of a reason to have all that sex. But and at the same time, it would have also legitimized it in a way. And I think the lack of outside world for me is an indication of just how poisonous and toxic this relationship is.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I think that... I don't know. I think this is actually, and I hate to say it, it's complicated and nuanced. This is a great fucking movie, okay?
Here we go.
It goes into areas of human relation that I don't see done well, like in cinema. And I just think I'm okay with every like the whole lack of extra C story. Because the C story for me wasn't so much about that exterior world. It's about he has a wife that he has basically abandoned, right? Oh, and she is not in the story because he's left her, right? And so her absence provides a context in that story.
And Sana's married too, right? Like they're both married, aren't they?
Well, no, she was working. She.
But at the beginning, he said something like, your husband lost his job, so now you both have to find new work or something.
Yeah, I remember that too.
Mm, I do remember that.
Oh, further complication.
Okay, well, that is a great move. Now I'm like, okay. Like, I understand, and I do feel the desire for a meatier context in which to put these two lovers. But, you know...
I think also the context, the context could also be something that we're just kind of lacking, which is that this is an almost mythical story in Japan where Sada Abe has been, she's basically the villain in the entire time. I mean, it's almost like, you know, if y'all remember like growing up with like Lorena Bobbitt, which was a sort of similar story where she was like vilified, you know, the butt of jokes. Like she was the evil, whatever. And then like maybe... however many years ago that was that started, like her story came out and you got to see like a sort of more human side to her where we actually like sort of understand what were her motivations. So I think that like some of the point of this movie could also just be something that we're not privy to, which is just showing the human side of Sada Abe, you know, which is.
But what do we learn about her, you know, like.
Yeah.
What do we learn?
She's real horny. Who is this character at all? Like, even outside that's of these, point. Like, the self-destructive tendencies.
Well, that's the whole thing, is that she's psychologically ill, right? And she has no other, like, it's possibly, I don't know, I don't want to be a psychologist here, but it doesn't seem like she's a healthy person with other interests or concerns. She's obsessed, like, to a self- threatening and a sense of even her own personality. She's obsessed with sex. We don't know why. We're not given, because the story that is actually being told is the obsession. The obsession is supposed to be the story, which for some people might be really boring, and I get that, but I was riveted by like every little turn of how that obsession was shaped over the time. Like at first it was cute, like Corey said, the NRE, which I loved because I hate experiencing NRE, but I got to watch other people doing it and it was fantastic. Then, you know, you see where it starts to kind of get fucked up. I don't know.
No, I mean, like, I'm not invalidating or trying to invalidate your feelings about it. I'm really glad you enjoyed it. Like, it's like, and it's not that I need her complicated backstory. I agree with you that, like, by the halfway through, I'm like, this is a story about two very mentally unhealthy people.
Ding, ding.
But for me, you know, I didn't expect this comparison, but maybe there's a comparison to my feelings about Barefoot Contessa, which of this person of Abe, she just has one character trait, and it's, you know, an unhealthy obsession with sex, and nothing else. That makes me feel like it's a problematic character on the whole, because this is a nymphomaniac woman, presented as such. And I personally just didn't find a lot to grab onto.
Question. Oh, I meant to ask this because I haven't seen this movie. It did make me actually think of Lars von Trier's Nymphomaniac. Has anyone seen it?
Yeah.
Are there any parallels?
Neither of them.
Corey, any parallels?
It's been a long time. I saw it when it first came out. So however long that ago that was, it's not readily coming to mind. No.
Do you all like?
In that it's about kinky sex, but like. Anyway.
Does it like my comparison to Requiem for a Dream? Does that hit for anybody else?
Oh,
does anybody else see that?
Yeah, for sure. In the way like that I'm glad I saw it, and I'm probably
they're not
good.
In Requiem for a Dream. They're kind of not even aware of how much their habit is destroying them, until it absolutely like oh god, I'm still traumatized by some of the things that when they that finally their realization happens, and I think that's what was also going on in the realm of the senses, is that they are not seeing anything wrong, or even if they do see anything wrong, because there are scenes where she's checking with him, right, where she's like I'm gonna keep doing this, and it feels like, and I might be wrong, he actually kind of agrees with her, like because he doesn't protest when she is really, you know, choking the crap out of him. And I find there's a parallel between those two movies where, you know, you don't really see anyone, objecting or confronting the harm that they're doing to themselves.
And it's also like, there's no happy ending here. Like, there's not a happy ending to that. Like, it's all converging onto this, like, tragic ending.
And I have complicated feelings about Requiem for a Dream because it feels like a manipulative piece of art more than a like a good one to me, at least as I take it.
I hated it.
Yeah, and like just finding a specific, you know, string of human empathy and just like, you know, playing it with a saw. And so like I was trying to think is like this, because this movie didn't really do that for me necessarily because it didn't resonate those emotions super well. I was trying to think of like, has anyone else seen the movie Shame? The sex addiction movie with Michael Fassbender by the director who did 12 Years a Slave. Because I didn't think of sex addiction really until you said it, Wizard. Shame is a really fascinating and also another one of those and these type of movies of just like a hollowing out of like a person unable to control their own self-destructive tendencies and so just like kind of bashing themselves up against the wall, like, and I can't really vocalize what the difference between what that movie gave and what this movie did not give me. I don't know, but I'm trying to like find some sort of through line between like what movies like this purport to do. I don't know, this movie did do a good job of like ramping up their own interwoven obsession. It did, like the ramp up I think was very skillful.
Yeah,
just didn't find a lot of emotional purchase with me.
The tragic aspect of the ending. One thing that Angela brought up, and I was thinking about after the movie was over, especially in light of some of the scenes where we're sort of presented with the outside context. Our male hero, whose name I keep forgetting, Kichizo, he commits suicide, right? Like there's an implication here that like he agrees to his own murder.
Yeah, I kind of took it that way.
Yeah,
and like I thought about that a lot in the context of what is coming down the road for Japan in the next like decade, and especially like the way that he acts when he is walking against that march of like militarism. I got that sense that he's like, I don't want any part of this. I don't want any part of this. That's me in a uniform dying on some godforsaken island in like 6 years. I don't want that.
And so this is a prequel to Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence.
Yes, and the Thin Red Line, maybe.
And ooh, Godzilla Minus One. Terrence this is a prequel to Godzilla Minus One.
Minus One, yeah. But I don't know. I thought there was enough presented to follow that like line of thinking all the way to the end of the movie. And I really, especially given like Oshima's like political leanings and his desire to tell this story in this way, I really, really saw like a man who is like, there is no future, you know? So I might as well like dive into this, and she's like, "I want to kill you," and he's like, "Okay, because this is good."
I mean, he says something along the lines of like, you know, "Don't slash my throat; like strangling me will suffice." And like, you know, I know what you want, but I might not be able to get it up, and all that. Like, you know, like he says these things where he kind of knows that this is.
He like surrenders in the end. In the end, she's like, "You don't seem to be enjoying yourself." He's like, "I'm enjoying it. If you're enjoying it," which is like.
So depressing.
And
it's supposed to be. And
I realize
it's supposed to be. And I think it works well there. God, how hollow and sad.
Oh, God. Yeah. I'm starting to like it more and more all the time, though.
Yeah.
Not me.
Sorry, guys.
Because like the thing about Requiem for a Dream is that it lifts you up, right? Like you have like summer.
Does it?
Well, it's like structurally, right? Like when we meet the characters, it has this like rising action where like it's like divided into like springers, like some summer, spring, fall or whatever. Like it has this rising action where things are going really well for a very short period of time, and then everybody's addictions get the worst of them, and everything collapses, and everything sucks, and nothing is good for anybody ever again. This movie does not offer that. Like, even when they get together, even when they're experiencing that NRE, like, you're excited, there's, like, compersion, but also we've seen her already, like, draw a knife on some lady who insulted her. We've seen, like, her behavior is strange. Like, these people are doomed from the get-go, and you can tell, and there is never a moment where you're like, oh, they're cute together. That's nice. Like, there are, I shouldn't say that. There are moments where you're like, this is nice. They're safe, sort of. They're safe from whatever's outside. But there's never a point where you're like, maybe it'll all work out. Because again, because they're married and they're it's the eve of destruction. It's fucking in the apocalypse. Like,
Yeah, that's true.
Huh.
Fuck.
I have a couple other random things in my notes here. I have a question I wrote. There are phones, which I guess is when I realized, like, oh yeah, this is like 1936 or whatever, but like there's like a phone call or something like that. And I'm like, oh, there's phones in this world, right? It's 36.
The traditional clothing does occasionally throw you.
Yeah.
But there are not yet gyrotron. My joke is gone.
Damn. Gyrotron.
The one from 400 Blows when there were the...
Gravitron.
Oh, Gravitron. Yeah.
Sorry. Right. My joke is lost. I'm sorry.
I have in my notes here that when he spits sake into her mouth, both Frida and I said ew at the exact same time.
Just baby burden. Just baby burden.
And then
some
when
good old-fashioned baby burden.
I had a different response. But that's...
I think that was also just kind of like how just like not super sexy this was feeling to me, you know, like I think under the right circumstances, something like that could be seen as sexy. But like I was not along the ride of feeling super sexy with these characters.
It's just my
I was
notes.
Okay with that. Like I wasn't expecting that to be part of it.
Well, how did you feel about the eating of the period blood? I have eat your heart out salt burn here. So spoilers for salt burn.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
you don't have to answer that. Well, there's a lot of like just like tasting each other and stuff. Like there's a point where he like licks her tears and stuff and talks about how good they taste and how he's never seen her cry. And like, so now he's experiencing that part of her. And like, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just trying to like, I think Angela has some really good questions about whether it's like just too overly unsensitized to all of this. I'm trying to figure out why I didn't. Emotional purchase. It had not so much for me, and I'm trying to wrestle with that.
In my notes, it just
despite me, you're like really understanding. I do think the ramp up of the tragedy is pretty skillful.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find. There's like this one other fucking movie about two people doing this to themselves, and I'm trying to like I'm doing these quick searches to try to find which like it's bugging the hell out.
Is
of
it
me.
A Lars von Trier movie? Those always end in. Horrible tragedy situations.
No, there's like a very specific like feeling that I mean I don't know if any of those. I mean I guess you could say like the first half of Melancholia probably, right? But no, that's fine. I'll stop searching.
You're gonna figure it out like just before we hit unrecord.
Yeah, it's fine.
I'll put it in the show notes. Go ahead.
This movie is maybe the best proof that the human animal can't just stay inside and fuck forever without consequence. And I think that this movie does that without being like moralizing or like hating on sex necessarily, which I thought was really skillfully done. Like it really threads the needle of being like, sex is awesome, get weird, but also maybe call a friend every 3 days to check up. If it starts to smell weird...
Yeah.
Go for
clean
a walk, get
room.
A haircut.
Yeah.
Clean the room.
Take a shower.
The amount
just
of
put a window,
they,
air it out.
The amount of times they have sex just in front of people trying to do their regular jobs was a point of probably, again, intentional comedy that had me laughing every single time. And again, it just speaks to like the story of trying to shut yourself off from the outside world so much that you're like, I don't care that this maid's watching. I kind of like it.
At one point, Sada says something like, you know, hey, people can see us. And I'm just like, I yell. I was like, when does that ever stop you?
I had that same time.
Can we talk
all right, this
about...
wasn't the movie I was thinking of. But has anyone seen the 2006 movie Bug with Ashley Judd and Michael Shannon about two people locked in a hotel room getting increasingly paranoid that there's something crawling under their skin. That is a hell ride, like a horrible hell ride. But that also that reminds me of this too.
That sounds fun. Would I like?
It's
that?
Very
that
good.
Michael, okay.
Michael fucking Shannon is a national treasure. And it's a very good movie, but a pretty hard one to watch.
Question for the hosts and also for the audience. Reach out, Crit Club Podcast, all that jazz.
At gmail.com.
Thank you. Did he fuck that old lady to death?
Yeah. I don't know what was going on there.
Oh, yeah. That was.
What's going on there?
Next week, I don't think we ever see her get up.
No. She wets herself.
Mm-hmm.
In ecstasy, she reposes.
I just wanted to see if we had reached a consensus on whether or not our male lead fucks an old lady to death.
Yeah, right. Yeah, unsure. And like, you know, I was also thinking when I was watching this, I'm surprised, I guess, that there's not more unsimulated sex in movies. I don't know. I'm not naive about like the prudishness of, you know, humans and the, you know, sort of real consequences that might actually like, you know, bring about if that were the case or whatever. But it's like, I don't know. It's like eating, sleeping, going to the bathroom, breathing, you know, after the sort of supermost after that, it's like one of the most common things that happen on planet Earth. It happens constantly all the time, every day. I'm just surprised that there's like not more of it.
I don't know. I mean, if it's a very personal, it's a very personal act, and people have very specific and valid personal feelings about it. Intimacy coordinators are a very valuable thing, for that. Like if it's your job to be in a personally challenging situation, I think I'm glad that there's way more simulated sex than unsimulated
sex. Like I said, I'm not trying to be naive about the sort of like actual real ramifications. I guess I'm just surprised it doesn't happen more.
There is porn.
And I'm like right now looking at the Wikipedia article, unsimulated sex, which has a list of feature
feature films if you're interested.
So it does happen, certainly, but you know, I don't know.
I for one look forward to Tom Cruise being the first actor to take a shit on camera. Really, really.
While hanging from
that.
A jet.
While hanging from a jet.
Yeah, but you can see that in your downtown areas these days, people. That's
true.
You don't need to wait to go to the cinema.
True. It's all crumbling, people. Lock yourselves in a tea house and stank it up.
All right. It sounds to me like we might be moving towards ratings.
Could say so, we've climaxed.
On this show, we rate things a little differently. We rate from 1 to 0 as a nod to the polyhedral die of Dungeons & Dragons and other role-playing games. So I'm going to go in the order in which I called on people. Wizard, what would you rate in the realm of the senses?
Fuck, I was really hoping that I could go last.
I'll go first.
Sure.
All right, Peter.
Six.
All right.
Six. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. Maybe it should be 7. I don't know. So I'll do 7. I'll go 7 because I think there's merit. I think I have respect for parts. I really think it left me very emotionally cold. And I had a very hard time connecting with most parts of this. But I'm glad to have seen it, and I think it made for an interesting discussion, and I'm like really happy to hear everyone's thoughts about it, honestly. So I'm gonna say 7. 7 for me.
7 for Peter. Okay. Then let's just go scattershot this time. Angela, what would you rate this?
Whew, this is a hard one to rate. Because I wanna rate it more highly because I do think it captures a human experience that has been documented to have happened. I think the way that they did it, like Wizard said, kind of without a sense of shame of human sexuality and kind of almost as like a, I felt like a fly on the wall, which I kind of enjoyed. But I can't excuse just how much sexual assault and, you know, the use of kids in the movie. So I would normally rate this probably a 16, but I'm going to give it an 11.
Okay. Oh, big drop.
Yeah.
Big drop.
I feel like I dinged Pachoch also when I was rating that. I was like, this is what I would give it, but like knowing the story behind it, like I had to ding it some points. All right, Wizard.
Right. Oh, it's your turn time. Now. Shit. It's a 12. This is like the definition of a 12. It's like if a 10 is like if a 10 is a movie where I'm like, meh, like this is a movie that's just 2 points higher than that. So yeah, there's some really good stuff here, and there is like a raw emotional core to this movie, even if that emotion is like lust to lack of lust or like emptiness or something like that. Like there is an emotional core here. There, I agree with Angela that like this is a level of intimacy on film that like we don't see very often, and I think that's really cool. But like it's like it. All of the things that I've said already. It's a 12.
Right on.
Corey, what about you? How are you rating In the Realm of the Senses?
Yeah, and one thing I had forgotten to like mention or whatever was just like the ending, like the very, very ending where all of a sudden out of nowhere there's this like news anchor voice guy that's like, this really happened, everybody. This is...
Do you remember that? You know, that reminded me of Gothic. Gothic did the same thing.
That's true. Yeah. Like, we are running out of time. She's at large for 4 days after she cuts off his penis. She's just like walking around.
I was
with
like,
her
really?
Dick in her handbag. Like,
yeah,
that
like,
story
you've shown,
is crazy.
Yeah, it's like you've shown everything else in this movie. Why wouldn't you just like show that? Like, take 5 more minutes to show.
She goes to a tea house. She gets a beer. She's like, ah.
Yeah, it's like they really wanted to end on this like final image or something instead of like giving it the last, you know, 5 minutes that it needed. But like when that happened, I was like, what the hell is that? Who is that guy? So I was.
That was how Gothic ended, too. That's funny.
Yeah. So like on top of like just my sort of general feelings about this movie and then the dinging it for the stuff Angela stated and then just the dinging it for the bad ending, I think it's going to end up being a 9. And I should say that.
Did I rate this high?
Yeah. You love it.
Okay, I love it. Put it on.
And
record.
I think that, you know, I'm saying 9. However, I think this is probably going to be one that I will remember and think about. Like, Peter, you mentioned Barefoot Contessa earlier, and I'm like, what the fuck is Barefoot Contessa? Like, and I had to go to Wikipedia and like pull it up and be like, oh, right, that one. Completely forgot about it. I don't think that's going to be the case with this movie. I think I'm going to remember it.
Sure.
Go ahead.
According to our spreadsheet of record, which listeners, you can see in your show notes, all the movies that we've rated, Corey, you and I both gave Barefoot Contessa a 5.
Okay, that sounds about right. Yeah, completely forgot about that. I don't think I'm going to forget about this movie, though. And listeners, please don't forget about us. Please send us your thoughts on this movie. You can reach out to us at Crit Club Podcast on Threads and Instagram, and you can also email us at critclubpodcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you, either on this or on what we're going to be watching next. And actually, I don't know, have we talked about what we're going to watch next?
We have not, and we're going to do it on
mic. We usually message about it and make sure that no one has seen it.
We're going to do it because it's my pick.
All right,
it's my pick.
We got to see all the dirty, gritty details and In the Realm of the Senses, and now you're going to see the dirty, gritty details of us. This is how the sausage is made, people.
Yep, unsimulated next week pick happening right here. I was, because I had forgot it was my pick until this morning, and I was like, oh, shit, well, I wanted to maybe continue on my French New Wave kick, which we did 400 Blows last pick, and I'm really, like, hungering for some Godard, because I've only seen one Godard film, and so I'm just polling you all. Has anyone seen Godard's 1962
No.
Vivre sa vie?
No.
Vivre sa vie.
I don't think I've seen any Godard, so...
No.
Well, we're not going to watch that this week. Oh. Maybe we will next week, but that's going to be my pick for next week. See, this is the unsimulated picking, everyone. I'm really curious if anyone here has seen the 1987 written and directed by Elaine May movie Ishtar.
Starring
Dustin Hoffman and Warren Beatty.
Oh, no, I haven't seen Ishtar.
Ishtar?
This was going to be my pick. This is so great.
Sorry,
this
Wizard.
This is so great. I was so on board for Ishtar. I was like, fuck yeah.
Corey, have you seen Ishtar?
No, but I would love to watch Ishtar.
Oh my God. It's arousing. This unsimulated picking has created a rousing wellspring of goodwill. Okay, so I do have a little bit of a preamble that I'll talk about for listeners and for the Quick Club here, because the other part of this is to let Corey know, I was going to text you, but this is unsimulated, that along with Ishtar, Mikey and Nikki is back on,
okay, good.
Is back on the Criterion channel. So listeners, earlier on in Crit Club days, it looks like it was around episode, I don't know, you can check the spreadsheet. But I watched Mikey and Nikki, and I still think it's one of the fucking like top 30, 40 movies I've ever seen. It's incredible, written and directed by Elaine May with John Cassavetes, Peter Falk. And so that led me to like, man, this woman, Elaine May, I really want to get to know as much more about her as possible. And so around episode 30, it looks like I picked A New Leaf, her 1971 comedy with Walter Matthau, et cetera, which was
bad,
less than good. I gave it a 10. Corey gave it a 5.
Yeah.
It looks like.
But 14? Good Lord. I must love
but
Walter
I still,
Matthau.
But like still thinking about like the juxtaposition between Mikey and Nikki and what the fuck was it called? A New Leaf, like, makes me so fascinated by her and her career as a person. And I was just scrolling through and saw fucking Ishtar, like, the shorthand for a box office bomb, which completely decimated her career. Corey, you've been on record on this show saying you love movies that kill people's careers.
Yeah, here we go.
So I honestly kind of know nothing about it except that it killed her career, except there's some sort of desert motif. I know nothing about
this. It's one of the most famous, like, quote-unquote, worst movies of all time.
Well, let's fucking watch Ishtar.
Let's fucking go.
If no one's seen it.
Let's
Angela,
do it.
Sound good?
No, I haven't seen it, so now I have to watch the worst movie ever. Thanks.
Yeah. No.
We've done that a few times.
Yeah. Wait a second. You just fucking... We just got done talking about In the Realm of the Senses. I also on. I was
now
looking
this
at
is the unsimulated movie picking.
No, in Criterion Collection, it was interesting. I was reading the description about it on the channel itself, and they said it is like shouldn't be. They said it's vilified, wrongly vilified.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
I'm also looking at a thread on the Criterion subreddit where people are basically like, this is, it shouldn't get the hate that it gets.
Cool. Well, I'm very interested and excited to watch my third Elaine May picture that I've seen. And also everybody else should see Mikey and Nikki because it's fucking genius. But yeah, let's watch Ishtar next week.
Very good. And we would love to hear what you think, dear listeners. Once again, you can reach us at Crit Club Podcast and at critclubpodcast@gmail.com. Love to hear what you think about Ishtar. Thanks, Peter. I'm looking forward to that. And
yeah,
thanks,
that's
everyone.
Pretty rad.
Yeah, no, I'm genuinely excited. Like, I love watching terrible movies, and that's one that's escaped me. So yeah, I'm happy for it.
Oh my God, look at this fucking Wikipedia page.
Speaking
for
of
it.
Just to jump on the what else you watching, I've been watching The Apple. So if anyone has seen The Apple, it's another famously
terrible
movie. Oh,
that's a fun movie.
But yes, what else you watching? That is the next part of the podcast where we just talk about all the other media that we are consuming in the past week or so. So let's go with Wizard. Are you prepared to go first this time?
Yeah, I'm prepared to go this time.
All right.
Thank you. What else am I watching? I'm getting some comfort food. I think not too long ago I mentioned I was rewatching King of the Hill. I might have said, this has kept me up for like days, I might have said that show had like 7 seasons and that it was 7 seasons of goodness. It has 13 seasons. Mm. 13
wow.
seasons of goodness. And that's great.
Does it maintain?
It is flawless from start to finish. It is,
wow,
it
okay.
Is,
wow.
It right. is, there is a small drop off in quality in like the last couple of seasons. But like it is such a strongly developed like character comedy that it just works every time. Like all these characters work in like infinite combinations, and it is just, it's, I cannot recommend King of the Hill enough to anybody. And I used to hate it as a young man. Very confusing. Other comfort food I've been soaking up. I have been watching The Midnight Gospel on Netflix. I'm
Pendleton
sure,
Ward.
Oh, yeah.
Pendleton Ward and what's his face? Oh, crap.
I know a guy.
Duncan Trussell.
Duncan
Trussell does the voice, and They're like edited versions of Duncan Trussell's interviews with interesting people. And it's just super fun. There's some super fun existential stuff, some really fun animation, some really like deeply sad and moving stuff. And I really strongly recommend it if, I don't know, you've been hanging out and haven't seen it. And lastly,
yeah, I watched that a couple months ago, not all of it, but I watched a number of episodes. And I was just like really impressed at how they could have basically two things happening, like where you're listening to this conversation and then there's this entire other plot that's happening with the cartoons also. Yeah. And it's very cool animation and all that stuff. So I was definitely entertained by it.
And like, Corey, did you ever watch Adventure Time?
Ever watch what?
Adventure Time?
Yeah, some. Not all of it, but some of it.
It's like one of my top 10 favorite shows of all time.
100%.
And I live for it. Midnight Gospel felt like, I don't know. I wanted more Adventure Time. It was strange how much I did like. It was like, this is, I know this is good and I know I will be affected by this, but watching this makes me just want to watch Adventure Time.
Yeah, I can appreciate that.
I should try again.
Adventure Time is so like fun and weird, and I think that definitely makes it like a unique and special show. I am also watching Japanese Tales of the Macabre, which are animated adaptations of the spooky stories of Junji Ito. I think I watched a couple of these a couple of months ago, I think. There's so many of these on Netflix. It's just super fun. Junji Ito is such an incredible artist and has such a like well-developed sense of what is gross and terrifying. It's just such a treat to soak up some of that macabre. So I recommend that as well. Still playing Helldivers, loving it. That's it. That's what I got.
Very good. How about you, Angela? What else are you watching?
A sad thing has occurred, by which I am getting my realtor's license and having to study all the time. And so I have not been watching any media, which is bizarre to me because that's usually what I do. And I haven't been to the actual movie theater in 2 weeks because I was in the Bay Area, and driving anywhere outside of the small town I was in is a real pain in the ass. And so there's only like four different movies playing in Alameda. So I just didn't bother with that. But I think this coming Sunday I'll be seeing something, and I can't remember the name of it. But as an alternative for my what to watch in, I will submit that Sada in this week's movie was perhaps a succubus, which you can visit your D&D Monster Manual to see all the stats on that and see if you agree and send us an email. Yeah, I'm hijacking.
I love it.
Hey, I love it. I think this is, I like this. Let's see if we can go through the whole Monster Manual.
Yeah. So hopefully I'll have something much more interesting next week. We'll see.
Right on. How about you, Peter? What else are you watching?
Well, Wizard, I was hoping, because you said you might go see it last week, that we could convene on Immaculate. Because I did go to the theater to see Sydney Sweeney's horror turn in Immaculate. Because I would love to hear your thoughts on that. Because I feel like it's like two movies. I don't know. That first half is like, I found the first half to be pretty overly conventional and uninspired. And the second half to be a lot of fun and very inventive and creative. And it mostly makes up for the first half, but I'm not sure it quite completely makes up for the first half. I don't know. I really enjoyed the second half of Immaculate. It felt like it took a while before the movie knew what it wanted to do or knew what kind of story it wanted to tell or how to tell it. But once it got going, I kind of enjoyed the second half of Immaculate. Other than that, finished watching all 11 seasons of Cheers. And I guess that's probably it for me.
I remember watching the final episode of that as a young person when it aired. I remember like the last image of like, didn't he like turn off the lights or something like that?
It's actually interesting because as soon as I watched the last episode of Cheers, this just happened today, I immediately rewatched the very first episode of it again, because as we've said, that fucking pilot is flawless.
Yeah.
And it is, the last shot is of him going through that hallway, where the first shot and the first pilot is of him coming through that hallway, from dust to dust, etc. First four
Five seasons of Cheers are amazing.
So no Frasier, right? We're not. We won't be. You won't be.
Dude, I like. I've watched. I started it last night, but I'm not going to go. Like, because I do not like Frasier. I deeply do not like it. I think it is a mean show with a real sense of like. Like, I loved the first four or five seasons of Cheers because it is about community and finding a collective group and the identity of a group with them. Like, Frasier is mean. Like, not as the character himself, but the show as well. Mm-hmm. I think is very, like, cutting and like, mean is the word. Yeah, I think it's a mean show with a lot of, like, with no attempts at any sort of emotional intelligence. I think it's, I don't like Frasier. Corey, what else are you watching?
I saw a couple of plays this weekend. I saw
Treading the Boards.
I saw Midsummer Night's Dream, which they did a great production of it in Berkeley, but I don't like that play very much. It, I don't know. I haven't seen it in 25 years or something like that, so I really didn't remember a whole lot of it. Man, the second act of that is just all of a sudden all the tension is just completely diffused, and then there's just this whole play within a play. They did a great job of making it very funny and very entertaining. The cast was extremely good, but like as far as like Shakespeare plays, not the best.
Do you have a favorite Shakespeare play?
Not really, not off the top of my head. I mean, I've probably seen Macbeth and Hamlet more than anything, but I mean those are two of the biggest ones.
Much Ado About Nothing.
Sorry, Keanu Reeves.
I'm pretty basic.
Yeah, oh my god, so bad. Worst Keanu movie ever.
You know what I love? I love Titus. Titus is great.
Ooh. Oh shit. Have you seen that movie?
Yeah, oh yeah, it's great. I've seen it a couple times. I love that movie.
Jesus.
It's not streaming anywhere, but I have a DVD of it, so.
God, it's not burned into your fucking eyes like it is for me.
I love it. It just scratches just such a good itch for me. Yeah. Just the aesthetic of it and everything, too. Also, speaking about like the aesthetic, I watched Forbidden Zone again. I've now watched it three times. I'm trying to get you all to watch it. It's on Tubi. It's free. And I bought the Blu-ray DVD of it because it has like folk director commentary. It has like a making of thing. It has a bunch of deleted scenes and outtakes and all that stuff. It just arrived in the doorstep an hour ago. So I'm excited to go like crack that out. And that's what I'm watching tonight. I want to see all this extra stuff. I love Forbidden Zone. And I also love this podcast, and this podcast, unfortunately, though, is coming to an end. Thank you again, everyone, for staying with us and talking about In the Realm of the Senses. We're looking forward to our discussion next week with Peter.
We're going to watch Elaine May's Ishtar, the highly regarded 1987. Angela, you look so upset about this. I'm
just skeptical. I'm skeptical, but I might be surprised. We'll find out.
It's lavish, and I don't know. I feel like this is going to...
Is it
like
Warren Beatty, isn't it? Warren Beatty.
Yeah, Warren Beatty.
I don't like Warren Beatty. This is the heart of the problem.
I don't think I do either,
really. He's the beholder
really.
Of the podcast.
Yeah.
I just find Elaine May fascinating. Yes, but that's what we'll watch. Ishtar.
Woo. Awesome. And if you want to watch it and tell us about it, at Crit Club Podcast or critclubpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for staying with us again for another episode.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.